This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back. Another episode, SI Boxing Podcast. Glad you could join me this week. Got a good show lined up for you. First up, we go inside the bubble out in Las Vegas. Bernardo Osuna, ESPN broadcaster, he has been in that bubble for the better part of the last 2 weeks. Talks to me about some of the protocols that they have out there, what it's like in front of no fans in some of these fights, and what he hopes boxing looks like in the future. Plus his thoughts on the recently somewhat announced Tyson Fury-Anthony Joshua showdown, which could take place as early as the summer of 2021. A little bit later on, Regis Progre, the former 140-pound champion, he has been in the news recently because the fight he had scheduled with Maurice Hooker has fallen apart. Regis walks me through how those negotiations crumbled, why he's not willing to go up to 145 or even 147 pounds right now, what he hopes is next for him, and a whole lot more. Stick around for that. Great interview with Regis Progre. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to my conversation with Bernardo Osuna. All right, joining me now on the podcast, live from the bubble in Las Vegas, ESPN broadcaster and reporter Bernardo Osuna. Bernardo, what's going on, my friend?
How you doing, Chris? It's great to be in the bubble. I'm the boy in the bubble right now, but there's no place I'd rather be. I'm just excited that boxing is back and excited to be talking about this sport we love so much with you, Chris.
So let me ask you this, Bernardo, because you are the only member of the ESPN broadcast team that is on site in Las Vegas. When this was first brought to you, you know, what was your reaction?
You know, I was kind of like a lot of the boxers that we've spoken to who said, look, I got to be ready when this happens. So I started to take the quarantine very seriously. You got to remember that our fights on March 14th and March 17th at Madison Square Garden were canceled due to COVID-19. I actually landed in New York at about 10 o'clock. My phone was blowing up saying, don't come into the city. Stay by the, if you can catch a flight back now, catch it now. If not, catch the first flight back. So I knew it was serious, and my daughters had just been sent home from Stanford and USC to finish their semesters at home. So my family took it really serious, and so I knew that I had to stay ready. And when I spoke with Mike McQuaid, who's our VP and coordinating producer, he said, look, everybody else can do their job pretty much from home. You know, Tim and Andre can commentate. Joe Tess can do it from the studio, and Kriegel can write his great stories and essays and present from home. He's like, but even on a normal broadcast, you're our eyes and ears. You're roaming the corners. You're talking to, the commission. You're getting all the information. So how would you feel about being our one guy that we're allowed on site? And I said, I'd love it. You know, I think it's a great responsibility. I also think it's a great opportunity. And I mean, if you think about it, you know, 30 years down the line, I'd be like, oh, you know, we're making history. So it was actually a really, really cool idea. And I really liked it. And fortunately, my wife and my daughters support me wholeheartedly. And here I am.
So how long are you going to be in the bubble?
So a lot of the ESPN crew is going to be in the bubble for the foreseeable future. It's 4 weeks for now, and it can, you know, extend through the month of July. Myself, my agreement was to come in and go home every week, but unfortunately, Disney doesn't want us to leave the bubble. I will be going home actually next week after the Thursday show to move my daughter's stuff back from Stanford. And the hope is that I can get back in the bubble, if not immediately after a quarantine period, and be here for the long haul. I've done it before. I've done it for Olympics, Pan Am Games, World Cups. It's fine. You know, the bubble is the bubble, but it's a new reality we're all living in, and people have to make sacrifices, and it's not as bad as it sounds, but, you know, it's not ideal either.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it could be worse than a nice Las Vegas hotel room in, you know, catered meals whenever you kind of want. There are worse things in the world for sure than that. So tell me, Bernardo, like, just walk me through what the rules are for you, like from the day that you get there to what you're kind of allowed to do throughout the course of a day.
All right, so I got here last Sunday. The later you get in, the better, because the tests, the COVID-19 test takes about 10 hours to get the result. So we timed it so I could come in. I got to my room. I checked in at around 1 o'clock. We had 3 o'clock fighter meetings, 3 to 7, because we had 5 fights. And then I just had to stay. I went to go get something to eat. And at about 10 o'clock, I took my COVID-19 test. Once I took the COVID-19 test, I was not allowed to leave my room. Then once I woke up, if you didn't get a phone call or a message by about 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, then that meant you were negative. That meant you could go over to the conference center and get your bracelet, which allows you access to the other part of the bubble where the fighters work out, where we have our top-ranking ESPN offices, where we have our food catered. And so that's pretty much what you can do. Initially, it was just getting over there via secured shuttle. Right now, they're letting us walk a single pathway from the hotel to the conference center, but can't make stops. You're not allowed to do much else. You know, the roulette table's calling my name, but I can't. I celebrated my birthday here inside the bubble. So, it's restrictive, but, you know, you're fine. They're taking care of us in everything we need. They put a Keurig in my room, you know, a little mini fridge. So my wife sent me over here with all kinds of snacks. And so you try to make the best of it. They just did a contactless delivery from the grocery store for all the crew. They, you know, we have laundry here. So they really take good care of us within the scope of what the bubble is.
So are there, I mean, you're obviously not walking to that roulette table or the craps table. I mean, how do you entertain yourself in the off hours when you're kind of just hanging around?
It's funny because these are the first off hours that I've had since I've got here. So this is the first weekend that we're going to have. So, you know, it's been all work and prep because we have 5 fights on the card. And so it's just been nonstop fighter meetings, production meetings. So we've been going since I got here, and this is the first really downtime. And so, you know, everybody can only be around a certain group of people just in terms of keeping that contact tracing. I can be around a lot more just because my job involves me going around all over the place. But most people have to stay within a bubble of maybe 15, 20 people that they can interact with once you're not in the workspace. So that's interesting. You know, I'll probably, you know, watch some Netflix like everybody else does. I'll do some work leading up to the next 2 fight cards and read a book. And I brought a putter and a little putt return machine. So, you know, I got my own putting green here in the hotel room. You just have to make do, you know, you have to keep yourself entertained. And eventually they'll get us a little workout room to work out next week. And, you know, just trying not to climb up the walls is basically what we're trying to do for this weekend.
You got to get some kind of like underground poker game going with like Carl Moretti and Brad Jacobs and, you know, a handful of those guys that are locked down. At least some gambling should go on in the bubble premises, man. You got to have something locked in there.
We're actually working on a little game between the group that I'm allowed to hang out with. So, we're going to get that going. And, you know, everybody's got to wear a mask and it's going to be weird. But, hey, it beats being alone.
I don't know how much visual interaction you have with the other people in Vegas, but it almost seems like from afar that there are 2 Vegases going on right now. There's what you guys are doing on the inside, like super protective, making sure that you're doing everything possible not to pass coronavirus to somebody. And then you like, I go on Twitter and I'm seeing videos of packed casino floors and pools with everybody just basically saying, screw it. It's surreal almost, Bernardo, to see 2 forms of Vegas coexisting at the same time.
If you look at it, Chris, it's a reflection of the 2 Americas, right? There's the America that says, hey, I can't breathe with this mask on. And then there's the other America that says, hey, you know what? For example, me, I've got my mother who's got rheumatoid arthritis. And I've, for the last 3 months, I haven't been able to hug her. I look at her when I go visit. She's on the balcony. I take her some groceries or whatever. My dad comes to get some. But, you know, I take it very seriously because I would hate to give the COVID-19 to my mother. And some people just don't care. I live in Orange County and you know, we just saw the video of, them going to the city council and just, you know, putting on a show. And now you're not supposed to wear, you're not forced to wear them. So it's the same thing here in Vegas. I sent a text to my daughters the other day as I was walking from the hotel room to the convention center, and there's the pools right there. And they, I said, I feel like I'm a fish in an aquarium because I'm on this side looking out. Everybody's at the pool, you know, having a great time. And I'm in the, you know, I'm looking from behind the glass. And it is what it is. I mean, it's how you feel about it. And for all of us, we feel the responsibility, especially like the ESPN crew and the top rank crew that, you know, and really fortunate that nobody's tested positive for COVID-19. But we really feel that if we do this right, it's going to open up possibilities for the other networks in boxing to come back, for the other sports to see the template of what needs to be done and how it needs to be done. And so it really is important for all of us to take this very seriously. And that's what we're doing. But it is two Vegases. It's, you know, this is a place where you come to have fun, gamble, eat. And, you know, the dinners are actually pretty good. But, you know, here we're all about those seafood towers at the restaurants and the steakhouses that are here. And you can't necessarily partake in that.
Oh, believe me, I've been in a few of those shows, and the seafood towers are very much a part of the top rank experience. So I tweeted this after the first show. I thought the visuals looked great. Like, I thought Top Rank did a great job, and ESPN did a great job of at least, you know, not making it look strange in a conference room. It really looked like a boxing event. What did it feel like in there with no crowd in attendance and guys kind of going at it without the natural ambiance of a crowd?
I actually enjoyed it. You know, I like the fact that you can hear the corners. You get a real feel. The punches are really, you know, it's almost like we're conveying what you and I usually get to hear when we are doing our reporting job on site or when we're sitting ringside, where you really get a different feel than what people see on TV. And I think with this, I think people are getting a more inside look at what boxing is like. You know, when you know, Buddy McGirt, who projects a lot, and he was basically like a fifth voice in the broadcast crew with Tess and Andre and Tim and Kriegel and I. And so it was very interesting. And I think it changes the dynamic of the corners too, because sometimes they don't want to yell as much. And you know, you don't have that intimacy. Even like when the commission was dealing with the disqualification, everything's over the microphone. There's no kind of hidden conversations anymore because everything's there, you know, raw for everybody to see. And you're right about the visuals. I think, you know, the team has done a great job. The giant video walls and you know, we've got our director Aladdin Freeman, who's here, and Mike Mascaro on site, and Fernando, who does a lot of the interviews with us. And so we got a really small core of people that do it right. And then in Bristol, we've got, you know, two teams. We've got Jim Zeroli leading the team that does the fight itself, and then we've got Mark Schumann, who usually does Max on Boxing, and our studio shows on the road doing the studio portion. So it's really a huge operation, and it's really, we're trying to make it as seamless as possible. Obviously, being in separate places makes it tough, but I think overall it's been a really good experience.
You talked to all the fighters, obviously, after each event, and just in the days that followed, like, what's been their reaction to participating in something like this after they've gone through it? I mean, how have they felt it played out?
You know, I think the fighters on the first card, you know, were very excited to be the first ones back. You know, Shakur Stevenson being the headliner was just very excited and willing to put on a show because he knew that a lot of people would be watching. Robezi Ramirez the same way. He's like, who would have thought, you know, this kid, a two-time Olympian from Cuba who defected, would be the first fight back for boxing in the United States. So they really took it seriously. And some of the other kids, like, for example, yesterday, you know, Mondragon, a guy like Gabriel Murataya, a preschool teacher who would never have been on TV at 2-0 and 6-0, you know, they're on TV now and having people watch them. So it's really, I think Andre Ward said it best. This is going to be a time for certain fighters who are off the radar to really get their opportunity. And maybe they don't have to wait till they're 12, 15 fights, 20 fights in to be on TV. So, you know, I think it's going to breed for great fights. It's going to make for some upsets. And so I think, you know, these guys really have an opportunity that wouldn't have been there. And, you know, speaking with those guys, when they say, hey, man, I knew I was going to get a chance. I knew that, you know, they need opponents. So maybe, you know, I'm not the A-list or I'm the B-side guy, but I can go and make a name for myself on these shows. And we'll have them every week, twice a week, which is a lot of fights coming up in the upcoming weeks. So, you know, we're going to see a lot of guys looking at this as their chance.
So I'll ask you this too, and I'll ask you in part for my own purposes, since I'll be doing it at some point anyway. You doing the post-fight interviews, you did them at a social distance, 6-ish feet, whatever it was, between you and the fighters on the stage. That contrasted, Bernardo, with what I saw UFC do right off the bat, where Joe Rogan just kind of hopped in the ring and, you know, was doing his usual thing right next to each other. I mean, how did you feel about being socially distant? Would you prefer to be doing the interview right next to them? Would you have concerns doing it that way? I mean, what was your overall sense of that?
Look, we're in the bubble. We've already been tested. I'd have no problem going, being close to a fighter and doing the interview. As a matter of fact, after the fight, Shakur Stevenson was going to go to the hospital. I did an interview with him backstage, and I was closer to him, and I was wearing my mask when I did it. And to me, that was fine. As long as somebody's wearing a mask, it's fine. But it's a decision that's made above my pay grade. You know, I think the most important thing right now is get it right. Make sure that nobody gets sick, nobody gets infected. And once things start to roll, I think it's a work in progress. You know, the goalpost moves every day. And so we're hoping to get it closer to the normal. But whatever we need to do right now to make it happen, I think is what we're doing. It's not uncomfortable. Would I like to be closer to the guy and have that intimacy? Great. Yeah. But, you know, I posted an Instagram post yesterday about, you know, what I missed, you know, and it's a picture of Shakur Stevenson and I laughing and, you know, me and my crew taking a selfie and with our mask on, except for me. And so you look at it and you say, that's what you miss. That's what you and I know boxing as, that camaraderie that you have with the crew that works with you, that spends countless hours making this happen and all the time they put into what we see on the air. And then the fighters. I mean, that's what I miss the most, talking to these guys, getting to know, being able to tell their stories. And so that's what boxing's about. And that's what the beauty is of being here and being able to hopefully transmit that to the fans through the broadcast.
So how often are you personally tested? You said you were tested before you got in there. Are there subsequent tests for you?
Oh, yeah. So we got tested Sunday night, which was, to be able to work, Monday, which was a weigh-in, and then Tuesday fight. And then on Wednesday, we get tested again so that we can work the Thursday fight. So now the weekend's here. We have to still stay within the bubble. We'll be tested again Sunday and again on Wednesday. So it's a 2 times a week testing I was telling people, hey, the best birthday gift I got was that negative COVID-19 test, you know, that allows me to continue. And it was funny because when I got the first test, I texted my wife and my girls and I said, hey, I'm so proud of you guys. I'm so happy for myself that I tested negative. But I'm happy and proud of you guys because all the sacrifices they made over the last 3 months to not see their friends and not go out and be really vigilant. I said it paid off, you know, and because we all look at it like, we've had fighters test prior to coming to Vegas and one of them tested negative and now his fight is off. And you're like, imagine that had been me, like all this effort to get me here, to make sure that I'm here. And all of a sudden I test positive and it's got nothing to do with the bubble. It had to do with what I did outside the bubble. So now that I'm in the bubble, I'm very vigilant about making sure that I stay, you know, healthy and safe. And the bubble concept, the protocols are working as established. So, it's all about doing it right.
So are they, the test that you're getting, are we talking like that full up the nose, touch your brain swab, or is it something a little bit different now?
Thank God it's not that lobotomy test that they do with that 14-inch swab or whatever it is. No, it's actually a throat swab and it's not terrible. It's not pleasant. You know, you get a little bit of a tickle in your throat and you start to feel a little sore throat, you know, in the hours after you've done test, but it's nothing major, and once you go through it once, you understand what it is. I just close my eyes, open my mouth, and say and let them do what they do. They get in there, they're out, and then you get the no traces of COVID on your test, and you feel like a champion. So just got to keep doing that.
Yeah, between basketball and boxing in the coming months, I'm really not looking forward to the number of tests that are probably going to come my way. It's also going to be interesting, I think. I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but, you know, when Michaela Mayer tested positive, She insisted she didn't have it. It was a false positive. And she's subsequently come out on social media and said, like, my doctor told me I don't have it. I never had it. I wonder if, like, if that means they will transition more to those horrifying swabs up the nose, because it seems like, based on what I read anyway, that those are the most effective ways of telling if it's a positive or not.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's a work in progress, but I think it'd be harder to get people to actually agree to those. I think it was a relief when they said, hey, it's going to be the throat swab. I was like, all right, I can do that. I'm like, I'm not all about, getting that thing up my nose for brain testing. So I understand it. If I had to do it, I would do it. But it's really a work in progress. It's just at that point with Michaela, she was the first one to test for traces of COVID-19. And it just had, it was the first time all of us were in this closed system. And so it had to happen. They did the right thing in terms of, hey, let's get you out of the bubble. Let's get you, make sure you're nice and healthy. Now she's had her own test and she can come back and go in front of the commission and say, hey, look, the doctor says I'm not, I'm asymptomatic. I'm not a threat to pass it on to anybody else. I'm not contagious. So I can participate with no danger. And I think we're in a better place now, but it was just the first show. And imagine, God forbid, something happens and we have an outbreak or something like that. Then it not only affects that show, it affects, the shows down the line. So that's why even for the crew, it's so important. I mean, we lose one cameraman then, or two or three, and then it becomes something. And all of a sudden we can't do a show. So, and same thing with the fighters, they're making very specific training times for each of them to train and not to come across one another, and that worked. But in the case of Michaela, Kay Caroma, her assistant trainer, was also the assistant trainer for Shakur Stevenson, for Jared Baby Anderson, moving down the line, Jamel Herring. So it's one of those things where he was a team member that had, different contact with different guys, and he did the right thing by stepping back and saying, hey guys, I'm going to pull myself out of the card so that everybody else can work and do things the way they're supposed to happen. So I think, she had to kind of take one for the team, as did Kay, and it was a right thing at the time. As we move forward, maybe it won't be the right thing at that particular time, because we'll have more knowledge. We'll know where we're at, and we'll make the adjustments accordingly.
Yeah, I get asked all the time, like, with the curve flattening nationwide, or at least, hospitalizations being way down, or, are sports being too careful? Of course not. I mean, like, sports are a $1 billion business. You lose a cameraman at ESPN, your entire broadcast is affected. It's not like you can just swap somebody in and out, overnight. So yeah, you've got to be overly cautious. Before I let you go, I don't know what this announcement means, but Fury Joshua 2021, the financial structure of a deal's in place. Tyson Fury, of course, has an incredibly dangerous fight up ahead still with Deontay Wilder. AJ may have as many as two fights. I mean, who knows what's going to happen with Usyk and Pulev in the coming years. But I guess your reaction to potentially a heavyweight unification fight sometime in 2021.
Means we may be working together, Chris. But
That's what I'm saying.
But apart from that, I think it's great that there's actually negotiations going on. We're living in an era where everybody's on social media talking smack and quote unquote making fights that never ever happen. So the fact that these guys, who are the two most powerful men in boxing right now, because Deontay Wilder, he's arguably the best heavyweight. Tyson Fury, after the win against Deontay Wilder, is arguably the best heavyweight. Then you've got Anthony Joshua, who has three of the four belts. And the fact that they want to have an undisputed champion, I think that's what boxing needs. I think the boxers have the power to say, hey, I want it. Now, if one of the organizing committees says, hey, I'm not going to sanction that fight if you don't fight your mandatory, and we don't get the unified and then eventually the undisputed champion because of political reasons, then that really sucks for the sport. I think this is one of the moments where the WBO, WBC, IBF, there's so many of them.
WBA right there, yeah.
WBA, they all need to get together and say, look, guys, we have a chance to make history. We have a chance to get all eyeballs of the world on the heavyweight division, which hasn't been hot in years. There's rare moments in the sport where everything is set up for it to once again take over. And this is one of them. And the only people that could really screw it up are the sanctioning bodies, if they start to strip, you know, whether it be the WBC, WBA, IBF, WBO, they have a chance to do the right thing for once. They get so much crap for the things they do wrong. Let's do this right. Let's let these guys fight. Let them take one mandatory, whatever they have to do. That's fine. Now, the other thing is the fighters. We've seen what happens with, you know, Anthony Joshua. He got sparked by Ruiz, and then he came back and beat Andy Ruiz in the rematch. So whether it's Pulev or Usyk, you know, there's nothing guaranteed there. But that's real. That's the heavyweight division. Anybody can get knocked out at any time. Same thing with Tyson Fury. He's got a dangerous rematch or a trilogy with Deontay Wilder coming. And, hey, anything could happen there as well. But once again, that would be fights being determined by what happens inside the ring. I have a problem with us not getting an undisputed champion in 2021 because one of the organizing committees said, my mandatory is more important than making history in boxing.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's a pretty, I don't want to call it easy, but there's a fix here. I mean, if this fight generates the type of revenue it probably will with like a 60 million live gate or, you know, broadcasters, broadcast revenue across the world, wherever it's coming from, you could put Dillian White and you could put Alexander Usyk as the co-main on that card. Right. You can pay them just a boatload of money and have the winner of that be positioned to face the winner of the second fight between Fury and Joshua, however they want to play that one out. Make a bunch of money, increase your profile. I mean, who cares if it's like, I mean, Alexander Usyk versus, I don't even know who it would be for like the vacant WBO title. Like, go fight that fight in like Kazakhstan or somewhere and make no money, as opposed to a massive stage where you're fighting on the Fury Joshua. I'll give you, tell you this, and you've been around Fury more than I have, but I just love how he needs these big fights. Like, he doesn't seem like he gets up for the average fights. Like, whether it's Tom Schwartz or, you know, his last fight against Otto Valence. Like, all right, I'm here. I got to do it. I'm going to go through the motions. It's the big fights he seems to get up for. And that's why he kind of, I think anyway, seeks them out and gets deals like this done quickly. We waited. I mean, I was covering the negotiation between, you know, Wilder and Joshua for like 2 years. It was mind-numbing. This stuff between Fury and AJ, it's a matter of months. And at the very least, they've got the financials figured out. I give Tyson Fury a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, because we're used to an era where everybody's protecting their, oh, everybody's looking for those, oh, is that an easy title defense? Yeah, I'm going to take that. Give me the number 15th guy instead of, you know, giving me the next guy up. Or in this case, give me the champion because I want to make history. I want to go down and be a transcendent figure in the sport. And I think that's what the beauty of that February 22nd fight was. The fact that we all left that night with this feeling of hope for the sport, this feeling that this could be a turning point for boxing. Fox and ESPN get together, you know, PBC and Top Rank get together, and there was no enemies. Everybody was on the same page for the betterment of the sport. And what we could see moving forward was that we could see whatever happens in that third fight, then the winner going against Joshua, and then whether it's Top Rank, ESPN or PBC and Fox working together with the Zone and Matchroom and making it happen. And it was just that happened. Then COVID hits and it kind of throws everything, the financials for everybody in the world off. And it was just such a moment of looking forward and saying this could be somewhere where boxing kind of gets back into the mainstream. And we've got to get back to that. And people got to get out of the way of success. You know, boxing does that so much, whether it be the judging, whether it be the sanctioning bodies, get out of the way. Let the fighters fight. Let these guys who care about making these fights that will generate millions and millions of dollars and really go down in history. We always complain, we don't have the Ali Frazier. We don't have the Hagler Hearns and Leonard Durant. Well, yeah, you know why? Because everybody gets in the way of it. These guys want to do it. They should be setting the tone for all the other guys at 147, which has a ton of talent, 160, which has talent, 75, you know, 68. Like, if Fury, Wilder, and Joshua could do it, then there's no excuse for the little guys not to do it.
You can have a big moment in the heavyweight division, that's for sure. Bernardo, stay healthy out there, man. And if somebody can deliver you, I love that pizzeria in the MGM food court. If somebody can deliver you like some buffalo chicken pizza, that's the money shot right there. Buffalo chicken pizza down there is key, man. So stay well,
man.
You just
made my mouth
water. Talk to you again soon.
Take care, Chris.
Hope to talk soon. All right, joining me now on the show, he is the former 140-pound champion. He's had maybe a rough week or so, has been trying to figure out a fight that was supposed to happen and now maybe is not happening. He is Regis Prograde joining me from down in Houston. How are you, Regis?
I'm good, man. Everything is, you know, everything is cool. Trying to still stay away from the corona people, but besides that, everything is good.
Good. Good to hear it. So, like, before we get into anything else, your fight with Maurice Hooker, the fight that was originally supposed to happen in April, it was kind of penciled in for at some point this summer and fell apart over the last week. In your mind, is that fight completely dead?
In my mind, I think so. Hopefully it's not, but I mean, in my mind, I think it is dead.
So where, from your perspective, did this go south? Was it when, you know, BOMAC told me that it was 147 or nothing? I mean, how did this fall apart in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it wasn't like the initial fight was scheduled at 145 and then I try to bring him down to 143. No, I mean, the fight was, first off, initially we wanted the fight to be at 140 because my goal is to be a champion and get at 140. So we want to be the fight to be at 140 for some type of, some maybe the eliminator or something like that. And, you know, they said he couldn't make it. It takes him 3 months or something like that to get down to 140. So they moved it to 143. You know, my side said, okay, that's fine. No problem with that. We'll do 143. Of course, the coronavirus hit for the April 17th. That went off. That had to be rescheduled. So he had time. You know, he had time to make 140. And now he's saying 147. So, it's not my fault that, you know, he can't make the weight.
So take me inside the discussions over the last week. I mean, how high were you willing to go? I mean, what concessions were you willing to make for this fight to happen?
I said 144. And I don't even want to go that high, to be honest. I feel like I could beat Maurice Hooker at any weight. I feel like right now I could beat him, you know, if no matter what weight he is right now and compared to my weight, I feel like I can still beat him, you know, style wise. I'm not worried about that. My thing is I want to be a champion again at 140. So I want my body to still be adjusted to going to making my weight at 140. It's not about the, people think it's about the weight. No, it's not about the weight. It's, you know, like the wait for the fight. No, that's definitely not the case. It's about my next fight, my future. I want to be a champion again at 140. So if my body is not used to making 140, if I fight at 145 or even 144 or 145 in my next fight, the fight after that, it's probably going to be hard for me to make the weight. I'm probably, you know, I don't want to struggle. I don't want to be, he's in that position. He's in that position to where he has to go to 147. His last fight, it was at 143, and he came in at 144 and a quarter, you know, so he can't make the weight no more. It's not my fault that he can't make the weight, you know, so that's kind of my stand on it.
Yeah, I totally get that stance. Let me give you, like, the devil's advocate argument here that some people might look at this and say, well, if Regis would go to 144, why not one more pound? Why not 145? Why was the 1 pound there so important to you?
It's not even that 1 pound. I don't even want to go to 144. You know, I'd rather keep it at 143. Really, I want to be at 140. You know, so it's not about even that 1 pound. So if it's the 1 pound, let him come down to 144. You know, if that's the case, the 1 pound, let him come down to 144. But he doesn't even. I don't even think he wants to come to 145. I think he wants to stay at 140. He wants to be at 147. I actually talked to him on the phone. And he said he's going to be at 147. I DM'd him, and we talked a little bit on, you know, we had like some, you know, some hostile messages on Instagram. But he was like, I was like, bro, come make the weight. He told me, he was like, man, you talk too much and you all this. I was like, make the weight. You go see who talk too much. And he was like, look, I'm at 147. Do what you're doing, but I'm at 147. So I don't even think he wants to come down to 145. But no, it's like I said, my goal is to be a champion again at 140. So and I don't. I'm looking at my future. I'm not looking just at this fight right now. I'm looking at my future. Of course, I can fight him at 147. I can fight him at 157, 160 if I want to right now. But I don't want to be stuck in the same position he's stuck in, and can't come back down and can't make the weight. That's the whole thing about me. I don't want my body to get adjusted to that, you know, to being heavier and can't come back down.
So what were some of those conversations like, whether it was phone, Instagram? I mean, were they just, you know, a back and forth where you're saying make the weight and him saying no?
Basically, yeah, that was it. Actually, so it's a crazy thing. Like one of my brothers in New Orleans, he FaceTimed him. He FaceTimed Maurice Hooker, and I was on the other FaceTime. He was on two different phones, and I was on the other FaceTime. So he going back and forth with Maurice Hooker, and he's saying he can't make the weight. He's just, man, look, I can't make the weight. He was like, I need to talk to my cousin or something like that, and I can't make the weight. And he was like, look, bro, like my brother, he was like, man, I don't like you. You don't like Regis. Regis don't like you. You need to make the weight. Why you just can't make the weight? And he was just like, man, look, I can't make the weight. That's the main thing. He was like, I can't make the weight. So, you know, I went on a little, I was pissed off about it, of course, when I first heard about it. So I went on a little rant on my YouTube channel, and, you know, he saw that. And, you know, so he DM'd me. He was like, man, you all talk and all this. And I was like, bro, make the weight and you go see who all talk. And, you know, he was just like, he can't, he was like, and then the last message he said, do you, I'm at 147. And so I just left it at that. So he's saying, that's what he's saying. He's going to stay. He's going to stay at 147. And okay. So if he's going to do that, clearly that's what he wants to do. He wants to be at 147, and I'm not going to 147 first. I will go to 147 eventually. That's exactly where I want to be, at 147, but I still want to be a champion again at 140 before I move up to 147. And that's just a personal goal for me, to be a two-time champion.
What has to be frustrating for you, Regis, I would imagine, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I mean, this was almost predictable. It took me calling his trainer for this to suddenly get out there. Like, but all along, it felt like, whether it was Brian McIntyre or Hooker, that they didn't want to make this weight. I mean, did you get that sense over the last few weeks that this weight thing was going to become an issue?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. I felt like that. Yeah, I don't think he wants to fight, period. You know, I don't know if it's the weight or what. Maybe it is the weight, maybe not. I don't think he wants to fight. So if he wants to go to 148, like I said, if he wants to go to 147, let him do that. But I don't – yeah, I feel like it was going to be an issue.
So, you know, you said you wanted to make 140 pounds so you can win a title again there. I mean, looking at the landscape, are you willing to wait as long as it might take to get that opportunity? If it really is going to be Ramirez, Josh Taylor at some point – spinning it forward, that might not happen till mid-2021. I mean, what's your timetables like on how long you'll stay at 140?
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, for me, I can still make the weight comfortably, you know. It's still, of course, a little struggle, but it's just something that I want to do. I want to be a champion again at 140. I want to be a two-time champion before I move up to 147. So as far as when it's going to take place, I don't know. I can't say, you know, when it's gonna take place or not like that. But boxing is a very, very funny sport to where one time you might think that, you know, it might not open up, and then a door opens up, you know. So for me right now, that's just kinda I'm just gonna keep my goal and, you know, and wanna be a champion again at 140.
So what kind of fights can you get in between? I mean, there was the report about Chris Algieri. I had heard he asked for a lot of money to fight you. What's out there for you at this point if Hooker's off the table?
I mean, that's kind of what my manager is, you know, working on. You know, I think it really doesn't matter for me whoever the next fight is, you know, as long as it's for some type of, like, eliminator, you know, that's my main thing. Of course, the money, the person never really mattered to me, but, of course, the money, you know, that's always a factor. And then, of course, if it's for some type of belt, some type of eliminator, something like that, to where it'll guarantee me to be in line for a shot, you know. So you're talking maybe 2021, but maybe it might be even closer than that. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's, like I said, that's my manager's job. Mm-hmm.
Is there a junior welterweight fight out there right now that really interests you? If you remove Taylor and Ramirez, because they're going to kind of circle each other till they get in the ring, is there a fight now that sort of piques your interest?
Not really. it's not. Nah, I don't think it's a. I mean, you're talking about, like, besides Ramirez and Taylor and me, the only one was, like, you know, Hooker. You know, he was, because he's the ex-champion, you know, basically. You know, he's a former champion, but nobody else is. I don't think nobody else even has a name that big to even interest me, you know. So, I don't know. It's not really a name, so that's what I'm saying. For me, it doesn't matter as long as it's for some type of title. And, of course, if the money's the right.
So why not? I mean, look, it's your body, clearly. You know what you can do and you know what you're more comfortable with. So with that, all that being said, why not move up to 147 where there's a lot of money and there's certainly a lot of fights? I mean, I was at one of your fights where you and Terrence Crawford and his family members went back and forth over some stuff. There's a natural kind of rivalry there. You know what's happening on the PBC side of the street. You know, why not make the jump now with the landscape looking what it looks like?
Just a personal goal. I won't be a champion. I won't be a two-time champion at 140. It's just something that I want to do, you know. Even you said, like, even at 147, my goal is to be a champion, you know. So, of course, at 147, how soon can I get a title shot at 147? You know, right now I'm coming off of I'm a former champion at 140. So it won't be a shot, like, right now at 147 for probably – a while, you know. But if I am a champion again at 140, soon as I move up to 147, I might get a title shot. Or the next, it might not be the first fight at 147, but it'll be the next fight at 147. So yeah, I mean, that's, like I said, that's the thing. It's just a personal goal. I want to be a champion again. And then once you're a champion, you demand more. You know, if I just go up to 147 right now, I'll be just in a mix just with everybody else. I won't be, you know, considered a top player. I want to be considered a top player. And to be considered a top player, you have to have some type of, you know, you have to have some type of belt, some type of clout coming with you. So that's why I want to be a champion again at 140.
Does it matter to you, Regis, how you get the belt? I mean, I would imagine, I've talked to Jose Ramirez about this, like, once he gets that Taylor fight, win or lose, he's gone up to 147. I don't know what Taylor's situation is specifically, but I mean, even if it's a vacant belt, does that matter? Do you just want that title?
I want the belt. Yeah, I want the belt. You know, that's the main thing. You know, I want to be a champion again at 140. Of course, it'll be good to win it from a champion. That's definitely, you know, the best thing to do, to win it from somebody. But if it's vacant, then hey, let it be vacant, you know, as long as it's a good fight.
Before I let you go, Top Rank's been doing these behind closed doors shows. You know, there's been a few things to unpack part of them, but have you watched any of them? And if so, what have you thought of kind of the whole scene that they've had with these, you know, kind of no crowd shows?
You know what? It's all about being adjustable, and, you know, we just got to adjust to it. You know, if it's no crowd, then it's no crowd. You know, it's better to be safe than sorry. So, of course, the fans make a big difference as far as, like, adrenaline wise. It makes a huge difference. You know, my last fight was over 20,000 people in the O2. You know, so you're talking about over 20,000 people to being no people at all. It's gonna be a big difference. It'll be almost like sparring. You know, it'll be like a gym fight basically. So, but it's just all about doing what you gotta do. It's not. You know, we can't. I don't think we can do nothing about it right now because of the coronavirus. So, you know, it's just all about, it is what it is, and we gotta do what we gotta do.
How careful, Regis, are you trying to be with protecting yourself from that coronavirus? Because we've seen now with the Les Pierre show and Pedraza getting called off, we've seen now three fights in 2 weeks. Really, the Top Rank's had to scrap because of either a fighter or a member of a fighter's team testing positive for this. I mean, when you see stuff like that, what do you think?
I'm scared, man. At first, I'm not gonna lie, when I was in LA, I wasn't kind of worried about it. I was thinking it was a government thing, and I still thought it was real, of course, but I was just like, man, I'm not worried about this. But if now it's messing with people's, like, career, you know. So as far as us, we can't fight if we have it, you know. I was in New Orleans like 2 days ago, and my sister, she had like a party. And, like, I wanted to go so bad, but I didn't go. I was just, and I was like, they begged me to come, like, come on, you'll be all right. I was like, man, I'm really scared. I don't want to get coronavirus. You know, Michaela Mayer, she was training in our gym, and she was supposed to fight, and she didn't even have it, but she had the antibody in her system, and they called off her fight, you know. And so when that happens, when you know somebody, it's always a big difference. You know, she was training, like, I was scared because I was with her in the same, we was all in the same gym. She was training and stuff like that. So I was just, you know, I was like fucking, I was spooking because of that. You know, I was real scared. So it's, yeah, man, I'm trying to stay away from people. And like I said, I was just in New Orleans and stuff for that, for like, I went to go to my sister's birthday party and I didn't even go. I went there basically, I didn't even go because I waited till like everybody left and cleared out because I don't want to catch it. You know, when you're talking about it's going to mess with our career and, you know, I don't want to be nowhere close to that stuff.
Yeah, you're smart for being careful because you're right. You can set people back months, if not years, just by, you know, catching it and not being able to participate in a show. Regis, I'm sorry to hear about the Hooker fight, man. That sucks because I thought that would have been one of the best fights of the return to boxing. But I hope to see you back again real soon in a big fight, man. You're always, always entertaining out there when you get in the ring.
All right, thanks, man. Y'all have a good one, man. Y'all be safe also.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. My thanks to my guests. As always, subscribe to the podcast over at Apple Podcasts. Rate, review, you know I appreciate it, and I'll see you next week.